Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, that was an energetic hello. There must be something in the air. Fall is coming. Welcome back to our choir. I seem to hear a certain energetic tickle of the T's this morning. Jim, you seem to be playing with a little more energy there.
There's a lot of energy over here.
Are you happy to have? Are you happy to have the choir? I hate to put you on the spot. Are you happy to have the choir back?
Yes, indeed.
Oh, good answer. Now, who knew that was going to turn into that? I think Jim's looking for more choir members. Feel free. Perhaps the best way to start, in light of the readings today, is maybe to have a moment of silence. Can you recall the last time you were quiet, even for a couple minutes? Doesn't happen often, does it? It seems a little odd, but both the first reading and the gospel today refer to. Now, there is that odd contradiction. We have no idea how old this person is and how long he's been deaf and mute, and how grateful he would be to receive his speech and his hearing. I wonder how long it took before he needed to go off and be quiet. Not sure why it came to mind, but it's some years ago. I think a talk was being given, and whoever did the opening prayer used the verse that I have at the head of my article today. It comes from Psalm 46, and it's verse 10 or 11, depending on that particular psalm and how it's interpreted. And it still strikes me all these years later that how he broke that down. I think it was a deacon that gave the prayer, the talk that day, whatever that was. Be still and know that I am God. The verse really speaks for itself. I mean, you really can make that a prayer for the day or a daily practice of your prayer. But whoever that speaker was that day, he really broke it down, and I missed, the last little piece on it, but you get the point. Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know that I am. Be still and know that. Be still and know. Be still and. Be still. Be. I suspect that not a particularly popular or inviting thing for most of us. Silence is a bit of a taboo in our culture. Well, it's unspoken, pun intended. Some people actually swear by or highly value the peace and the awareness of the inner self in quiet. I can still remember because it impressed me at the time, a couple years ago now, is it two or three? I think it's three, when Sister Nancy Sajak was still here, and she was teaching even the little second graders how to sit still. How'd you like to have to do that? To sit still. I don't remember. She talked about it at the staff meeting at times, and the kids would sit and they would sit still because sister said. And then they would write a reflection. Or they would speak what they heard. And I was very edified. You see, there is in fact a silence in us. Sometimes we use the word presence but we're not much of a culture to be aware or pay attention to presence. There's others, and I suspect the numbers larger, who cannot tolerate silence, and they go to great lengths to avoid quiet of any form. All the unfinished things that we hold, that's why we can't quiet our minds or settle our bodies or get our heart to calm down. Because if we carry too many unfinished things, emotions, memories, hurts, and disappointments or losses, those things can build up and we don't want to see them or hear them. And so silence is difficult. You know as well as I that there's many people, whether they're watching or particularly listening or not, either have the radio or the TV or both on at the same time all day long, just for noise. It seems more people today, because I do hear it with some degree of frequency, particularly maybe more often than not, the young, are pretty comfortable saying, "I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual." Now, that can be a good thing. You know, it could be a very true and honest statement, honestly. We're spiritual beings because we were created that way. Even from the earliest scriptures, God blew into his nostrils the breath of life. So the Spirit of God, not only through that verse, but in the waters of baptism, we become spiritual beings by the nature of being created by God. So there is a silence, there's an inner presence in us. It's noticed at times because of certain events, maybe a tragedy or a loss, or maybe a great joy, however it is, and you've looked out your kitchen window 1,000 times in 3 days, doing the dishes or whatever, and all of a sudden that day, there's something on that apple tree or whatever kind of tree you have in your yard, and maybe it's the morning fall or mist is on that tree, and you look at that tree and you see it like it was for the first time. And that says something about the silence or the presence of God in us that stirs our notice. I notice, and I suspect you do too, that inevitably, you see people with a phone glued to their ear, or they have those ear pods, I guess you call them, or they have the phone like this. I see it at Rosie's Park all the time because I can look out the rectory windows there, and people go for their walks, and they're walking like this. It's like, aren't you afraid you're going to fall down? I mean, I wouldn't. I mean, you know, I would fall down. But they're walking their phone and they're watching videos or whatever. They're talking to somebody. Now, again, that's not a complaint or a judgment because, you know, I do it too sometimes, not when I'm walking. But when we're so occupied by the stimulation of our cultures, by our culture, what is it that we're failing to see or hear or perceive? I know, it's kind of uncomfortable, really. It happens so often that it's simply a preoccupation that we're largely unconscious of, and sometimes it's very idle, we're unaware because it's unconscious, it's just, well, we're just that way, and yet sometimes it's really quite intentional. I don't really want to see what I'm seeing, and I certainly don't want to look at or feel what I know what's in there. But for those who seek the spiritual way, Christians or those of faith who want to walk the spiritual way, know the value of silence because it awakens them to the nature of the spiritual already in them. Some call it the holy longing. Isn't there a holy longing in you? Well, there is. Maybe you never named it that way, but, well, you're here to hear the word and to receive the sacrament and to share the fellowship of other believers. That holy longing, that desire for wholeness or union, why do people get married? Because it's a reflection of the union of love that we long for in God that won't be fulfilled this side of heaven. I've known couples who've been married 50 or more years. We had the Dick and Ellen, 68 years. Are you ever sitting quiet with each other? Maybe, maybe not. But marital union is simply as an image. I know marriages aren't perfect. It's an image of the union that we share with God. I can remember when I was in high school, I know, a long time ago, and it was the CYS, Catholic Youth Students, I think it was, and the icebreaker, you know, that they had, pretty, pretty odd, but that was way back in the 70s. And I still remember the young girl's name. She was her name was Anne. And they had us pair off one by one, and we sat knee to knee, looking into the eyes of the other person, one on one, in silence. Now, what high school kid wants to do that? Which is exactly why I remember her name 45 years later. There's something about that silence. Not popular in our culture, and scary because of the things that we've not been able to resolve in ourselves, the good, the bad, and whatever else, that we simply don't take the opportunities. 3 or 4 weeks ago, we heard the story about Elijah, who had defeated the prophets of Baal, the false prophets. And after that strong encounter, he feared for his life because Queen Jezebel wanted to kill him. Now, here's a man of deep faith. He's a prophet of the Lord. He loves God. He wants to hear God. And yet now, like in the rest of us, in a moment of anxiety and fear and the threat of his life, he's just fallen apart. And he wants to just die. So the Lord nourishes him and gives him the bread, and the angel brings the bread and the water, and he eats. You remember that story? It's just been a few weeks ago. And he goes to a cave on Mount Horeb, another name for Mount Sinai. And he's in the cave, you know, and you remember the reading. First there was a great wind, a powerful wind, crushing rocks, and then there was an earthquake, and then there was a mighty storm. But God was not in any of those things, because they're more of a metaphor for the inner storm, fear and anxiety, that was going on in Elijah. And then here he is shivering in this cave and all this bad weather going on out there. And he hears a still, small voice. And it draws him to the edge of the cave where he encountered God's presence. Somewhere, somehow, there's a parallel there, I think, to the readings today. That if we can allow ourselves to be still and be quiet and just be, mindful that our breathing in and out, many who do the work of contemplation will often pay attention to their breath. How does that little song go? In goes the good air, out goes the bad air. Breathing can be very prayerful or contemplative. So that we are paying attention to our breath. Because breath, or ruah is the biblical word, is the wind or the breath of God. So that we're breathing in the life of God and breathing out all that we'd like to be released from. So we hear in the first reading the listening, if you will, of Isaiah, another strong prophet of the Lord, one of the major prophets. And it's a time of anxiety and fear. I don't know if this is exactly a time of exile or not. But Isaiah hears the word of the Lord. Now, that's not always an easy thing, because if you're a prophet of the Lord and God tells you to tell his people a message, you say, well, I don't really want to say that. What does all that mean? But Isaiah hears the word and he tells, because he hears it from the Lord and he believes and he trusts in God's word, be strong and fear not. But then the reading goes on, and God wants the people, he's really trying to draw them interiorly to themselves and to remember their faith, their trust in God, in all that God has done for them and for all of us. And the parallel, of course, between this and the gospel, God continues, then the eyes of the blind will be opened and the ears of the deaf will be cleared. Now, I think here in the context of Isaiah, about 800 years before the coming of Christ, this is probably more metaphorical in the sense that spiritual blindness. How many times do we long to see the evidence or the proof, if you will, of God, but somehow our eyes are closed because there's too much inner noise, too much inner anxiety going on to see the actions and the presence of the Lord around us. And our ears are deafened because of all the inner self-talk and inner critic, inner judge that's just telling us, you know, we're never enough. We didn't do it right, people. Don't like you. Whatever that inner language is. God's trying to calm their spirits so that they know that God is in their midst. Now, on the other hand, can God talk or reveal the divine self in active and loud ways? Of course. I think maybe there's a Lions game today. How many people does the silver, what do they call that stadium? Ford Field? I mean, what is that? 60,000 people or so are going to be in there? That place is going to be loud. And now some people, in all that noise, could quite likely have a God experience. Especially if the team wins. It does happen. People can pray very deeply and richly with music, song, dance, singing. I'm giving you a little help there, Jim. You know, it's very healthy mentally, emotionally, psychologically. Nerves are better off when you sing. Nature, sunrise, sunset, there's all kinds of ways that God actively, with noise or activity, or dancing, if you will, you know, God can reveal himself. But the gospel today really gives us a pretty hands-on, functional, if you will, practical example of hearing and speaking. Notice that it was people. Jesus is traveling. The guy got around. He walked a lot. He had to because he's, you know, broadly speaking, I'm going to say Israel is probably about the size of Michigan, different shape, but about the size. And he's going from one end of the country to the next, probably on foot, maybe on a donkey, probably not a horse. And that's an important detail. But notice that this deaf blind man, this deaf mute person, is brought to Jesus by other people. And people, it doesn't say who they were, relatives or friends, people brought this deaf man to Jesus. Now, if you pay attention to that, that means that they heard and they listened in their spirit. Their hearts were moved because they had compassion for the one. They loved him in one way or another, relative or friend. And they saw with compassion his loneliness and separation, isolation, without hearing and speech. And in that compassion, they brought him to Jesus in the hope of some positive outcome. And so they do that. They heard, they felt, they perceived, and they acted. What might that look like in you for another, you see? It's easy to be blind and not see what's right in front of us, and it's even easier, selective hearing, to not hear what we clearly hear, but we don't want to hear. So notice how personal the encounter is. Jesus doesn't do this often. I think he did it with the blind man who had been born blind from birth. He takes him off by himself to the side. But in this personal healing, Jesus felt it was necessary to afford this man some privacy. So he takes him away from the crowd, and he puts his hand on his ear and somehow puts spittle on his tongue. That's personal. And he groans. How often do we hear that God groans? The sadness or a sense of the suffering. Or the longing of the desire of God for this man, for all men and women, to be whole. So he groaned. That groan was a kind of a prayer. And then he says, Ephratha, which means in English, be opened. To loosen the tongue and open the ear. I think there's another baptism coming up in a couple weeks. I don't know the date. But if I do it right, and if I remember, there is part of the baptismal rite where the priest, in fact, touches the lips of the child and then the ear. It's part of the baptismal rite. So that the tongue or the mouth, the tongue will be loosed to proclaim faith. And the ear will be open to hear the word. So that's God's groan or God's longing. Yes. A holy longing. You know, God has a holy longing for union with all of us here and now and hereafter in the glory of heaven. It's so personal. Consider the life of a person, this man, who can't hear or speak. He can see, thank God. Now, if seeing, hearing, or speaking, which of those senses would you want to surrender if you had to choose? I don't know, there's a lot of racket in the world. Maybe I'd take deafness. But that's not a good thing. Because studies show that the deaf and those who don't have the resources to do anything about their loss of hearing, they become more isolated, they become separated, they become lonely. And then physically and emotionally and psychologically, they decline. Hearing is very important, as is the rest of the senses, for the wholeness of life. So these people, these friends or relatives, really changed that man's life by being still enough inside, hearing, perceiving, feeling, and then acting. They bring this man to Jesus, who loosens his tongue and clears his ear, changes his whole life. What might that look like for us on behalf of others or for ourselves if we learned or took the time and practiced being still? Oh, it would be uncomfortable for probably, I don't know, let's say a month. Isn't it a truism that psychologists tell us it takes 30 days to break a habit or to create one? If you made it a habit to be still and quiet for 3 or 5 or 7 or maybe even 10 minutes a day, in a month, you know, you'd kind of get through the weeds of all the stuff you don't want to see or feel or hear. And finally, it's like there'd be calm and there'd be quiet. There would. And you say, well, that'd be hard. I don't have time for that. Well, you make a lot of time for a lot of other things that you don't really have to do. I mean, I know it's getting a little cold out there now, but you could take your coffee and sit in the yard and look at your flowers or the yard work you did. Or if it's too chilly, sit in a favorite chair and look out the window and notice the birds, maybe hear their chirping and just different ways. It can be quite enjoyable, really, to be calm and quiet, to listen to your own silence. More and more young people, teenagers, are practicing Eucharistic adoration. The schools more often now are taking children, young kids, for Eucharistic adoration, and they're quiet, and they like it. It's a great blessing. So the contradiction, of course, is that, you know, not knowing how old this guy is, if he's 25 or 30 years old, I wouldn't think it'd be very long before he couldn't take all the noise. And he'd have to go off by himself and find a place to just be still and be quiet. So he could ponder the mystery of God that loosed his tongue and opened his ear. That's a strange contradiction, isn't it? Half the time we can't stand all the noise, and then all the other half of the time, 3/4 of the time, we can't stand the quiet. We all know what selective hearing is. We all know the things that are right in front of us that we fail to see. Sometimes it happens because of intentional resistance. We don't want to be bothered or inconvenienced. Sometimes it's psychological. It's unconscious things that it's just too much. Sometimes it's fear and denial, like the constant news of all the tragic and oppressive and difficult things in the news. Who can take it all in, really? Some of it is psychological, then. It's denial and fear. You would know the difference between being lonely and being alone. Believe it or not, if there's 60 or whatever thousand people at that Lions game today, I bet you some of those people in all that crowd are still going to feel lonely. But if we took the time and the discipline and the grace, we would be happier. And then in the quiet of that simple silence, we would, in fact, whether we're religious or not, we'd come to realize how spiritual we are, because God is already in you. There was a poem by Michael Coist years ago. It's just a poem. I think about part one of the verses had to do with a little baby in a crib. And a person looked in and could almost feel that baby saying, "Be still, this dwelling is inhabited." And the story I read years ago in Chicken Soup for the Soul, those things are still around, I think. And the four-year-old, I think, you know, had the parents had a new baby. And the four-year-old wanted to go in and look at the baby and be with the baby by himself. And they were afraid because the parents were afraid because they thought, you know, the four-year-old would be jealous and might hit or harm the child. So finally, you know, after a couple of weeks, they let the kid go in and just kind of stand there. But they could look, they had the door cracked and they looked in and the little boy was very gentle with the baby. The little boy said, "Baby, baby, tell me what it's like. Tell me what God's like, because I'm beginning to forget." Even an infant, four-year-old, could say that. Don't be afraid of silence. Because, like for Elijah, silence is the seedbed of revelation. Different kind of reflection, right? Be still. Listen for God. He's there. God wants to be seen and heard. May the Lord open our eyes, our ears, and even our hearts, that we can perceive, trust, and believe that God is with us with love, mercy, compassion, and forgiveness. May God be praised, who lives and dwells in you and in me.